Something's going on in the woods. Something's going on.
They're not dogs. They're not coyotes. What could it be, right?
I had an encounter with a skunk ape, and it completely altered the course of my life.
I found a skull. I think you guys are going to want to come film this.
Put him out.
Sightings of a UFO hovering over a barn.
Millie woke up from a dream, and when I went into the bedroom, she said there's a monster on the wall.
They saw that the creature had run through a barbed wire fence. They were able to obtain hairs. They sent the hairs to their lab, and it came back as an unknown creature.
What is up, guys, and welcome to the most bizarre show on the internet. I am the one that they call Shane.
And I'm Oren.
And this week, we don't have too much going on as far as us doing any kind of deep dives or research, but we have an absolutely fantastic guest, well, group of guests coming on today. So we won't take up too much of the time beforehand because it's obviously a great conversation that I'm sure you guys are going to want to hop into. But before we get into that, of course, we have one quick news and update. And Oren, I'll pass it over to you to let them know what's going on for the next coming weeks.
Okay, guys, so next week I'm not going to be able to record on me and Shane's normal recording day. So in lieu of like our regular weekly episode, we're going to do something a little special for you guys. We are going to drop the final four and the championship round of our Cryptid Brawl March Madness tournament as our regular weekly episode. So I'm excited to see how it all shakes out and who ends up on top. So you guys look forward to that as our normal weekly episode next week.
And as far as who the winner ends up going to, it won't be announced on that episode, but it will be announced on Instagram, and it'll be announced the following week on our episode. So if anybody is looking to figure out who was the one that won the Cryptid Brawl, it won't be on that episode. Like I said, you guys will have to check on social media, or you guys will have to wait until the next episode of Bizarre Encounters, and then it will get announced right in the beginning.
And you guys know the drill. Don't forget to follow Bizarre Encounters and Open Minds Media on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Discord, all that good stuff. And also be sure to submit your own questions for Bizarre Inquiries. We're going to get right back into doing listener questions after the Cryptid March Madness Brawl tournament is over. So definitely submit y'all's questions. And like I said, get in the Discord and let's chat about it.
And I do have one on retainer already from our awesome listener, Riley, who's been listening since the very beginning. So just a shout out to you, Riley, out there. We got your bizarre inquiry. We're sitting on it. We're waiting until we start back up the normal questions, but it'll probably be the first one we hit. So just a heads up if you guys were wondering what was going on with that. But beyond that, of course, keep submitting those questions so we can have a little bit of a database, and we'll definitely run through them all and make sure that we cover all of your guys' questions. And if anybody has an encounter to report, don't forget to report that to omencounterreports@outlook.com. Or you guys can go to the link tree, and there is a specific submission form directly for that. I don't care how big, I don't care how small, I would absolutely love to hear about it. And possibly we could talk about it on the show. We could have you be a guest on the show. We could possibly come out and investigate it. Or if you guys just want somebody to talk to simply and you guys don't want your story to be put out there, it's totally okay too. We're both here to listen and help you out a little bit with your encounter and trying to figure it out in your own minds, of course. And if anybody wants to support the show, best ways to do so is through Patreon and through the OMM merch store. Recently on the Instagram I did and Facebook, I posted a 10% off promo code for the merch store, which is Cryptid10, if anybody wants to take advantage of using that. And as far as the Patreon goes, you get exclusive merch store discounts if you want to make sure you get a little bit bigger of a discount. And over there, there is a free trial for the $3 tier and the $5 tier. So if you guys want to try it out for 7 days, see if you like it, it's always an option. And of course, I'm always more than happy to take suggestions on how to improve the Patreon. And if anybody's interested in podcast production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media. And I can do stuff like editing episodes. I can make clips for you. I can do logos. I can do Instagram posts. Like I said, a full list of different podcast production services. So just shoot me a message and we can figure something out for you guys.
And as always, a big thank you to our awesome sponsors, Rick and Hans at I Know Squatch, for all your Sasquatch gear needs. You know, we love their stuff. We wear it all the time. And then Cryptoteology, our buddy Joe over there, he's always killing it with his wearable quipdids.
You're just going with it now. You're just falling right into it, right?
They're wearable quipdids now.
I dig it. I like it.
I fuck it up too many times. Just rolling with it.
Just go safe with it. And
don't fuck it up if I fuck it up on purpose.
That is true. That's one way of looking at it. And a big shout out to Snarly Yao. Don't forget to go and check him out for any of your beard balm and or body product needs. He has a beard balm, he has a beard oil, he has a beard shampoo, and he has a body shampoo, of course, a body wash. And it is this awesome smoky cedar smell with a hint of mint. So definitely recommend going and checking it out, because I absolutely love it. And if you guys are looking for some cryptid events to go to throughout the year and you guys are somewhat in the West Virginia area, Dave is always throwing a bunch of fantastic events, one of which is the Cryptid Halloween event that we went to last year, and we should be back again this year, of course. So make sure you guys mark your calendars and check out all the events that Dave's throwing on, because he has one of those personalities that he just draws in some of the best people. So I guarantee you guys will have a great time at any event that he's throwing, of course, because it's just a wonderful group of people. And to all my paranormal investigators out there, don't forget to go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. And if anybody has any questions on that whatsoever, about programming, about anything, you guys can hit up Barry over there on Dimension Devices. He is the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions. And if you guys decide you guys want to scoop one for yourself, don't forget to use our affiliate link. Greatly appreciate it. Goes back towards helping out the show. And for anybody that's kind of been sitting on the fence as far as that goes, he has a lot of new updates that are happening for it. He's working on an app. You can use it right now through the internet, but he's going to make an actual physical phone app for it. And there's a couple other new things that I was checking out that he was posting about. So a lot of really cool updates going on over there. So definitely worth going and checking out.
And all this shit is mentioned in the link tree in the show description. But before we jump into this episode, our guests did have a little bit of technical difficulties there at the end of the interview. So, Shane, why don't you tell everybody a bit about what happened and kind of how this episode is going to abruptly end on them.
So at the very end of the episode, they said that their power ended up going out, like their entire block went out. So they're currently sitting with no power. So unfortunately, the end of it kind of gets cut off. But luckily, I was able to take at least their links and everything from the episode they recorded for Inquiries of Our Reality. So if anybody listens to that show and they notice that the links sound a lot alike, that's because I ended up having to take it from that episode. Not that it's any crazy part of the conversation. It's just kind of getting out the basic information. So if you guys notice a little skip at the end and then it goes into the links, that's what it is. I apologize. And if you guys really, really want to have them come on and keep talking about their theories, their encounters, all of that stuff, you guys can let me know and maybe we can coordinate something back out and maybe finish up a little bit more of the episode. But just had to throw that one in there, of course.
Yep, just a little bit of housekeeping.
Please welcome to the show, ufologists and authors Leslie and Stephen Shaw. How's it going today, guys?
Hi.
Fantastic.
Thank you for having us.
So thank you guys so much for... I'm sorry, but thank you guys so much for being here. Shane told me a lot about y'all recording the other night for Inquiries, and so I'm super excited to pick y'all's brains a little bit. He said y'all have got some crazy stories, so I can't wait to dive into it.
Indeed.
Not as crazy as you might think.
Well, I know there's a lot of really cool interconnecting pieces that are some of the stuff that Orin and I have been diving into recently. And I know as soon as we start rolling in, Orin's going to start clicking some of the same thoughts in his head as I am, too. So I think it'll end up being a great show. Like I said, a lot of the stuff you guys talk about are a lot of stuff that we've been diving into. So perfect time to have you guys on. And I guess to get everything rolling, at least any of the audience that may not be familiar with you guys or your work, why don't you let them know a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your guys' book?
Well, we are the authors of Who They Are and What They're Up To, Leslie and Stephen Shaw. Stephen is a retired acupuncturist and Tai Chi teacher, and is also currently a orchestral musician. And I'm still working for the newspaper. I'm a journalist for the last 20 years, and I still work for the paper part-time. And
how about your degrees?
Oh, yes. I have a degree in animation, but my minor at college was in ancient art history, which was very helpful to writing this book. And I really needed, I did most of the writing, but I desperately needed Stephen's help with, he has more of a science education and also in geology. And I needed him a lot for the science part of the book, particularly.
The sensitive skeptic I am.
And so he's my fellow theorist and and just all around researcher. You know, when I needed something to track down, I'd put him on it, you know, dig out the information I needed. But then we had a lot of personal experiences that were the impetus for the book, the reason for writing the book. And they don't really completely come into our book very much. We talk about them in the beginning so that people get an idea of where we're coming from and what happened to us to make us like this, to make us think like this. And then the book gets into our theories.
Yeah, we found a lot of kernels of truth, and our book kind of makes up a complete corn cob. So I kind of say, well, we'll probably talk about a couple of the kernels, but the whole corn cob is really in the book. And so that's just kind of a colloquial way of kind of saying, I like to keep things, you know, the KISS method, you know, keep it simple, stupid, but you know, people relate to that, you know?
Yes. So, yeah. And we also discuss our work with the spiritual side of things.
That's very important.
Stephen comes from a very, very psychic family. And, then we started doing a chakra work, and also Tai Chi is like a moving meditation. So that opens the chakras as well.
Tai Chi is integral to, I believe mm-hmm. to any of the stuff we're going to be talking to tonight. I think that, I believe, and I know for a fact that, a lot of it has to do with our receptivity of the brain, the different brainwave cycles. I was just reviewing some stuff today about stuff I've been doing called entrainment for like past 30, 35 years, where if you use like, you know, one frequency in the left ear and another frequency at a certain tone level, that it will basically bring the brain into a theta wave state, which makes you more receptive to all the things you're going to be talking about tonight. And it's just rehashing the same stuff. And doing Tai Chi is a perfect way to get into those states of different consciousness.
And I know our book is about UFOs and our theories concerning them, but there is definitely a psychic component.
Yes.
The more people I interview, I find there are a lot of psychic people were alien abductees. It seems to be possibly a trait that they look for when they're looking for
frequently they're musical too, or very, very mathematically oriented.
Yeah, the victims that we've spoken with. Paula, for instance, one of our people I'm writing about in the next book, she's 73 years old, and she was an abductee in her youth. But she still has this psychic connection with them. They don't physically take her anymore, but they still communicate. And we find that that's true with Stephen as well. When they're done with you, they're not completely done with you.
They still visit sometimes, but they don't actually take you because you're not as interesting.
At least we don't think so. We could be wrong.
That's my experience and my parents' experience and whatnot. So.
So I guess a good spot to start rolling, since you guys were talking about it a little bit, of course, I definitely got to dive into the experiences, because of course that's what a lot of people end up coming to the show for, is they want to hear some of the stuff people have been through. And a lot of the time we've kind of noticed that the more people openly talk about their experiences, the more it kind of opens up the opportunity for other people to be a little bit more open about their experiences and not feel like they're the only ones who have gone through that. So, of course, good spot to start. We got to hear about your guys' experiences. I know Leslie doesn't have as much as Stephen, so maybe Leslie can go first, and then Stephen can kind of dive into his stuff that he's been dealing with his whole life.
Sure, Leslie, you go first.
All right. For years, I was listening to things that Stephen was telling me that were happening to him. And I was believing him, but there's that 95% belief, you know, where you just can't go all the way. You can't quite believe it all the way. And but then in 2005, I saw my first UFO. Finally, I really wanted to see one. And there it was. We were driving back home at night on
From Joshua Tree
to Yucca Valley. Yeah, it's a hot spot for UFO activities, actually. So we were driving along on the highway and at night, and I looked up ahead. I was driving and I looked through the windshield, and there was a bright white light ahead of us in the sky. And at first I thought it was a plane maybe flying into Palm Springs Airport, but then it didn't behave like a plane. It didn't move like a plane. And it just seemed to be hovering and glowing brighter and brighter. And it didn't have those extra lights, the little running lights on either side of the light.
She pointed it out to me. She's the one who first saw it.
Yeah. And I said, well, what's with that light? You know, and then it just got brighter and brighter and brighter. And then suddenly it shot away at multiple thousands of miles an hour over the northern horizon and was gone in less than a quarter of a second. it moves so fast, it streaked out visually into a line, and the back of the line caught up with it all in, like I say, a fraction of a second.
Fraction of a second, yes.
I would have guessed the speed somewhere at 20,000 miles an hour, and it didn't take off, like, slowly ramped up to that speed. It instantly moved at full speed. So the inertia, if it was a human pilot inside this thing, it would have crushed them against the wall immediately. There's no, I don't even think the equipment in the plane could have survived that kind of inertia.
Tell about your second
acceleration.
One, your second.
Oh. Yeah, and then in 2020, just a few years back here, we had moved to Desert Hot Springs, just near Joshua Tree, and then we saw another one, a white light in the sky. This time, it didn't just hover and glow. This time it was moving, and it was moving in impossible ways, or like V turns, angular turns at speed.
And soundless.
And then it would stop and hover, and then it would take off at full speed again and make these crazy angular motions. And then again, it took off north over the northern horizon and gone at thousands and thousands.
And there was
miles
another couple just a few houses down from us that actually saw the
it
same.
It wasn't just us.
Yes. So it wasn't just us. There was another couple that used to live where we live now.
And it was about then I said, you know, we really should write a book. And that's about when we really started.
Well, yeah,
real
really,
research.
For me, I really started researching really about around 1990 when I had. When I turned 30, I just, too many weird things had happened to me that I just couldn't explain. I was a doctor at that point, and I just needed to know. I needed to, like, for my own sanity, some things that had happened to me, we didn't even talk on, you know, last time we talked.
We tried to explore them.
That were just so bizarre that, but it happened to my family, and so I guess maybe I should, like, go into my early stuff. Next, maybe?
Yeah,
sure. For sure.
When you were three.
Okay,
start
so
there.
Yeah, so when I was 3 years old, I would fairly frequently be visited, at least on a couple different times that I can recall, by this invisible being that kind of felt like a cat jumping on my stomach and my chest, but it was invisible in the middle of the night, and it was playful. I didn't feel any malevolence or any threat from it, but you know, I grew up in a family that came from wartime England. Okay, my parents were children that grew up in wartime England, and you know, so they no nonsense people, no British. I was born here in America, but anyway, so I grew up with that. That we had this family spirit guy called O'Glegley that was kind of a protector that would visit people at times. Mm-hmm. So I was fast forwarding to when the age of 10, I was sleeping in a bunk bed. And I was awakened by this weird sound that I couldn't understand. I knew it wasn't the dog. So I got out of my bed and I was walking down the hallway. There was a dim light in the kitchen and my heart was pounding and my pulse was up and I literally was scared. I didn't know what I was going to see. And I was about to turn the corner into the living room and I just go blank. Okay, next thing I know, a few hours later, I'm awake back in my bunk bed, all nicely tucked in.
And this happened frequently with the family. They would get, they'd see something bizarre and it would frighten them, or they'd be at least wondering what this strange thing was, and then they'd black out, immediately black out.
The thing is, like, you know, like, say, I grew up in a family that kind of accepted the spiritual, because my mom was an automatic writer, and her mother was, and her mother's sister was, and their grandparents were from Germany. So we, you know, I wasn't, you know, going to talk to my friends at, you know, elementary school and junior high about this, because I think that I was, like, you know, either lying or I was, you know, had a mental problem or that I was in a haunted house. So this is something, you know, don't really talk about with your friends, mm-hmm. apart from maybe really close friends. So anyway, when my brother turned about 7 and 8 years old, because I'm 6 years older than him, so when he was about 7 and 8, he started sleeping in the closet in our room.
Because he was afraid of the little man.
And I asked Philip, who's no longer with us, but I asked Philip, I said, you know, Philip, why are you sleeping in the closet? He said, well, I'm afraid of the little men that come in the middle of the night. And I, you know, and I kind of knew because I had a vague memory of seeing these little men that kind of, to me, they look like garden gnomes, about three or four of them that were kind of shimmery, that were walking into our bedroom from the door into the bedroom. And I was literally kind of, I was a little scared. So I kind of believed him. Yeah. So my first UFO I saw when I was 10, it was a very large orange globe that was going from south to north, and I called Griffith Park Observatory the next day, and they had no knowledge of it because they're not looking in the direction of Woodland Hills. So anyways, the real meat and potatoes happened when I was 18 in January of 1997. And it started out with my dad's doors opening and closing on him one night.
His closet doors.
And I just kind of, just shrugged it off. And my dad and I were working together as, cabinet makers. So I just kind of brushed it off. The next night, at this time in my life, I was studying Tai Chi and I was reading Paramahansa Yogananda's works. And I gave him this little booklet for my dad to read because I thought it was cool. So about 9:30 at night, he came back into my room and with this puzzled look, and he said, "Stephen, I'm hearing silver bells." So I went in there, and sure enough, there were silver bells being rung inside the wall by the fireplace. Got my sister, and she said, "Where are those silver bells coming from?" or something along those lines. And sure enough, we banged on the wall, looked up the chimney. It went on for about 15 minutes, but then it stopped. The next morning, it was our practice to call my mother, who was living up in the Sonora house, which we were building because we're contractors, that was 350 miles away. And she said, "Stephen," and she said, my dad said, "it was really weird. I picked up the phone. I heard this ringing, this bell ringing. I picked up the phone, and this man's voice said on the other end said that I am the invisible on Beachy." Or something like that.
And we still don't know what that is.
And my brother, who was, let's see, I was 18, so my brother would have been 12 at the time. My brother said, "No, the phone never rang, but my mom did pick up the phone." Okay, so that was weird enough. The next night, I went back to sleep in my bedroom, and I was awoken by this whizzing sound in the air, like a whoosh, whoosh sound. I thought maybe I was hearing things or something like that, so I decided to go back to sleep. Rolled on my left-hand side, and then from the base of the bed, two distinct gentle pushes from the base of the bed. And I thought, well, I'm living in Los Angeles, could be an earthquake. I ignore it, try to go back to sleep again, then two more vigorous pushes, and then a third time, stronger. And then, at this time, I'm starting to get a little bit worried, okay? And then I get three distinct taps on my shoulder. Or my right shoulder, just like a finger, just like a index finger is tapping me three times. And this time I'm like scared and annoyed. And I whirled around and I said, "What?" And I felt there was a presence still there. It was kind of like this presence I knew was there, but then I black out.
Then you couldn't see anybody.
I couldn't see anything, but I just black out. Now the next night, I decide that I'm not going to sleep in that room, okay? I was scared. Literally, I was scared to sleep in that room. So I slept in the living room in my work clothes from that day on the sofa. And about 5:36 in the morning, again, this is January, so it was dark. I woke up, and I look at my piano because I'm a pianist and an accordionist, and I play many instruments. And I thought, well, what am I going to play today? Anyway, so I looked at that, and I heard the little fountain in the other room. So I was awake. I was alert. And then from behind me, about 25 feet behind, this entity that was 6 to 7 feet tall, blue-white entity, walked towards me about 25 feet in about a second and a half to 2 seconds and stopped by my right-hand side. My whole right side of my body went numb, paralyzed. Not in a scary way, but I just had no sensation.
And it filled the room with blue light.
Yes, right. I forgot about that. Yeah, as it came toward me, the whole room was filled with this intense blue-white light, and I could tell what it looked like, but I just couldn't see its face. And I was thinking, oh, I get to see the family spirit guide, old Glegley, that I've heard about since I was a kid. you know, that had visited several people and even saved a couple people's lives. So I'm thinking, I'm going to see him. But the other part of me, the logical side, said, dude, you can't move. You are immobilized. You can't do anything. So I'm a 50-50 mix.
Like a tickle of fear. Yeah,
tickle of fear, tickle of excitement, and tickle of fear. And it bent down and it whispered in my ear, not in my brain, but it whispered in my ear, hi, Steve, in this ghostly type of whisper. But it was a strong sound. And I thought, wow. But I couldn't turn my head to look. And it stayed there for a few seconds, maybe 10, 15 seconds, and then it left. And then I just don't know what I did after that.
Again, it seems to be a memory lapse.
I know I told my dad about it.
In our book, we wrote that Stephen then went to tell his father because he thought that's what happened. But when we really delved into the memories further, we discovered that he has no clear memory of actually going to tell his father.
No.
And it seems to just kind of go blank right after.
What my father and I do know is that 6 hours later, we were getting hungry, 11:30 in the morning, so I decided to, you know, get some food for us. So I reached into my right-hand side pocket, and I pulled out the coins that I had, and all the coins, just standard American coins, they were all magnetized. I had coins, and I had some nails, some six-penny nails, and I could pick up the coins with the coins, and it didn't matter. My dad could pick them up. They were somehow magnetized, and I don't know how. I've tried to do it with really strong magnets. I've done research. I've tried to find people who tell me, how can American coins be magnetized? How can a non-magnetic material be magnetized?
Have so not we think found sometime he was abducted and exposed to an incredibly strong magnetic field of some kind.
And then the final night, which I have no recollection of, was what my dad witnessed. My dad witnessed, again, in the middle of the night, he awoke and he saw this intense blue-white light outside of my bedroom. And he was in the process of getting up because he wanted to find out what the heck was going on. And a voice in his head telepathically said, Jeffrey, just go back to sleep. Nothing to see here. Everything's fine. And that's exactly what he did. So we talked about that [S2] Yes. [S1] at the breakfast table. Before we went to work, but this was like a week, and that in 1979,
crazy things,
that none of us, well, including my sister,
and then Philip, these incidents frequently do come in clusters. Philip, Stephen's brother, when he was 16, he had an incident of three. Where one night he had these bright white lights shining in his room.
Totally different house, by the way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, from a different house. This phenomenon follows the family to all different locations. It's not like a haunting that seems to stay with one location. But in his case, Philip saw these bright white lights shining in his room, and he's looking at them, trying to figure out what they were, and he blacks out. Then the next night, he hears a scrabbling sound. He's in bed, and he hears it down by the floor. He thinks it's a cat, so he reaches down to pet the cat, and a hand grabs his arm, and he immediately blacks out. And then the next night, he saw a gray alien in his room. This is the first time the family reported seeing a gray alien.
A tall gray alien.
It was a tall gray. He said it was about 6 foot. And then he blacks out again. But this was when we finally realized, when we started comparing notes, we started realizing what is going on. Because, first of all, this blacking out thing and this big chunks of missing time, this is the signature for the alien abduction phenomenon.
Right,
and then,
right.
Finally, one of the family members actually did see one. So now we know who we're dealing with here, you know. And I think we think that they may have been preying on the family for multiple generations. And that's what this spirit guide has always been to the family. And when we first started doing our research into the abduction phenomenon, unlike what people thought, which was that the aliens are just curious about us, they just want some samples, no big deal, they're going to take us and put us back. But that's not really what we found was happening. What's happening instead is that they find a certain genetic strain that they like, that meets their criteria, and they take that person again and again and again and again through their lives. Then they'll start taking their children and their grandchildren after them. And so it seems to us like it's more like they're harvesting a product than they are just taking scientific samples. So I make the analogy in our book that it's like a cow. You know, the farmer, he has a cow out in the field making milk, eating grass and making milk. He abducts the cow every morning, removes the milk product from it, and then he puts the cow back out in the field to make more milk. And the farmer protects the cow. The cow is his prize milk provider. So he gives he also offers it protection. And we think that's what's going on with this family spirit guide, because sometimes he does save the family members' lives.
Yeah, he did, at least a couple times.
But we think it's, I think it's more because he's protecting his prized cow that he needs to get genetic material from, continue to get genetic material from.
So do you guys have any theories about what the actual genetic markers or genetic material in these certain, you know, family strains or anything like, do you have any thoughts on what these entities are actually looking for, or?
Yes, we do have some data on that. First of all, it seems to be almost entirely a Caucasian phenomenon. About 94% of
abductees, according to like Linda Moulton Howe and a couple other people,
and Jacobs and Barbara, what's her name? Barbara Lamb. It seems to be almost entirely Caucasian phenomenon. So they're after Caucasian genetic material in large quantities. And they also are particularly fond of people with Rh negative blood. Even though we only make up a tenth of the population, Rh negative persons make up 4 out of 10 of abductees.
Oh, wow.
And their prevalence, they seem to be a prevalence for green-eyed people. Green eyes are rare in humans. It's actually a mutation, recessive mutation trait in us. And but a higher percentage of people with green eyes are taken.
And also people that are a bit more sensitive and psychic too.
Seems to be they like the psychic people more. And also the Basque people. Now, we don't know if it's because they like the Rh negative and Basque people happen to have a higher percentage of that than other races. So they're after the Rh negative, therefore they take more Basques. Or maybe they just are after Basques that just happen to be more Rh negative. You know, we don't really know which criteria is what they're really after.
Chicken and egg situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they also prey on the fetuses. Believe me, when I was starting to research this, I said, God, it couldn't be weirder if I was making it up myself, you know. But one of the major sources of data for us on the abduction phenomenon was David M. Jacobs. He's written like 4 or 5 books on the subject. And he, in his long career, he did about 10,000 abductee
hypnotic regressions
on abductees. And he says out of his 10,000, 1,100 of them are women who are taken on the spaceship, impregnated, and then put back. And then 4 months later, they're taken again, and the fetus is stolen. And then frequently, these women, years later, will be abducted again and introduced to their hybrid alien offspring. Again, as I was researching this, I said, this is the scientific position I have to take?
Yeah, in the beginning, I thought, you know, having been a doctor for 20 years, I thought, well, this is BS, you know. But then you started reading about the obstetricians that swore up and down that according to ultrasounds, these women were pregnant and they had a 5-centimeter, 4-month-old 5-centimeter fetus that was about the size of a baseball that was growing normally. No signs of, you know, miscarriage or anything like that. Then patient comes back in. There's no fetus there. There's no even sign that she was even pregnant, she was even pregnant.
With the usual miscarriages, there's some tissue usually left behind. In fact, the doctor,
there's some trauma.
And after a miscarriage, the doctor will frequently vacuum out the stuff out of the womb.
The detritus is left behind.
But in this case, when these women are taken and their fetuses are stolen, somebody vacuumed out the womb already. The doctor says it's like you were never pregnant.
Yeah, it's much more than a vacuum. It's like literally like a medical removal. You know, not scarring the uterus, because some of these women have multiple instances where they get pregnant and then they lose the fetus, you know, they just like there three or four times. So they don't want to damage. They don't want to damage the incubator. So they don't damage the
incubator. Right. They're using us as incubators.
Yeah, we are being used as incubators.
And then we think we know where they're taking the fetuses because there was this disclosure event called the Dulce Papers. Dulce, New Mexico area, there's this underground base that it's supposed to be a secret base, but ufology community is aware of it, and we call it the Dulce Air Force Base. It's 7 levels deep, and on the upper 5 levels, it's supposed to be just a U.S. military, but the 2 levels below that are supposed to be U.S. military joint alien base. And the security guard, who did not have clearance for the bottom 2 levels, snuck down there one night, and he later wrote these Dulce papers that where he reported seeing hundreds of these vats that had creatures growing them that were either hybrid alien beings, human hybrid aliens, or gray aliens inside these vats. And so we think that's what they're doing with these fetuses that they're taking, is they're continuing to gestate them in these
These go back to what, the 60s or 70s, the Dulce papers? I forget now.
I have to look it up. But
it was 60s or 70s.
Yeah, sorry about that. I can't remember all the details.
It was way before the Matrix movies and that kind of stuff. So
that was a pretty long time ago.
Yeah. It's way before that. So,
And we have the testimony of Phil Schneiderman about the Dulce Air Force Base as well. Schneiderman was an outside contractor the government was using to create more of the base, you know, to tunnel to the base.
To enlarge it,
to make it tunnel out larger areas. Mm-hmm. And then one day he's tunneling along, and there was a lot of, his workers were these black berets, he said. He had black berets with him at that point. And they were tunneling along, and a wall accidentally came down and exposed a cavern.
They use explosives.
They tunneled it out. And then the wall came down, and on the other side of the wall were these gray and reptilian aliens. And there was a pitched battle, because obviously the Black Berets weren't at the security level to know about the aliens on the other side of the wall. And so they had a battle, and Schneiderman had 2 of his fingers blown off, and 66 men were killed in this battle, supposedly. Mm. And then Schneiderman went on tour talking about it, and he wouldn't shut up. And
He was a whistleblower.
Yeah, he wouldn't shut up, and he wouldn't shut up, and he wouldn't shut up. And then the next thing we know, he's dead with plastic tubing wrapped around his neck.
Which is a very, very dumb way to kill yourself.
And they called it suicide, you know, of course. But we think he was silenced naturally because he wouldn't be quiet. And so that's the other thing that happened at Dulce Base. And then...
Let's let the Max ask some more questions.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry, you guys. Once I get going.
No, so I did have just a question. When you were talking about more of the spiritual and psychic elements of the phenomenon and how the extraterrestrials or the entities seem to be attracted to people who have those traits, again, do you think this is like a chicken and egg situation where those are traits they're actively seeking out, or maybe people who have those traits are just more prone to experiencing these kind of extraterrestrial visitations?
I think it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a frequency that they can communicate with us on more easily. Mm-hmm. It's definitely down in the theta, probably the theta wave, or maybe the delta wave of state, maybe even a little bit of alpha. And for instance, you know, we believe we have a lot of this stuff in our book. You know, we delve deeply into, you know, why we believe what we believe. We call them intraterrestrials. We don't see them as being aliens per mm-hmm. se. We see them basically be more like being cousins, and they have a lot of skin in the game. And they definitely do not like the idea that since 1945, we've been playing around with nuclear power. Right. and blowing
and
things
weapons.
Up.
Yes, and they're very worried about that.
From what we see from our perspective with our research is that they are trying to contact us, and it's just the only way, because they're more evolved, okay? Mm-hmm. They didn't lose their ability to use telepathy and other more higher vibrational frequencies. But to get through to the barbarians that they call us, that we're barbarians.
Yeah, they call us barbarians.
not a lot of us can actually literally either believe or can actually be receptive mm-hmm. to what they're trying to say. I mean, right. Even in Zimbabwe a few decades ago, spaceship landed and talked to basically a bunch of the greys, got out and
spoke to children,
telepathically with all
Is
these
this
children.
The school landing where
yes.
the UFO
school landed.
Landed.
Yes.
School,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And whenever they get around to giving us a message, it's always the same.
The
take
message.
Better care
take
of your
better
planet
care of the, of,
and
of yours.
And get rid of your nukes.
Yeah.
They want us to denuclearize for
it's
sure.
It's the same thing.
And we started. Stephen had when I first met him, he had this book of that was
Admiral Byrd's
diary, uh-huh. right? And I read it cover to cover. Yeah, that's
yeah. I got a first edition, 1992.
Right,
oh, wow.
And then we did see there's this great Russian documentary from '86, I believe that. They talk about what really happened at Operation High Jump, how the Operation High Jump was sent to, their mission was to destroy this Nazi base that had been established under the ice sheet. And because Hitler had this bizarre affiliation for Antarctica that nobody could reconcile, he pumped, tons of military and resources,
millions
of dollars worth of resources into the continent. And we surmised that he set up a base there, mm-hmm. And the Operation High Jump was sent to destroy it. And then, as they're about to, engage, they're attacked by a flotilla of space saucers, or a squadron of them, or whatever. Flying saucers come up out of the ocean and shoot some ray at them and sink one of the ships and down half of their aircraft, their carrier-based
aircraft.
And kill
a number of men.
Kill dozens of men. And then went back down. And then the diary, though, it talks about being at the North Pole instead of the South Pole, so the opposite ends of the world, and it's exactly the same time. We believe that after Operation High Jump, when Admiral Byrd got back to Washington, he was silenced. He was muzzled by Washington. And never said anything else about it, except in his posthumously discovered diary that talks about a meeting he had with the people under the ice sheet. And we believe this meeting really did take place, and that the aliens, quote-unquote aliens, are really a branches of the human race that have split off from us thousands and thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. And they did not lose their technology with the... we believe the demarcation point is the Great Flood. Prior to the Great Flood and after the Great Flood, the gods lived among us before the Great Flood, and the gods were gone after the Great Flood is one of the big demarcations. But we discovered three decades ago, they discovered nanodiamonds in the 13,000-year-old soil in North America. And that pointed to a celestial impact of some kind, which has since been discovered. It's the Younger Dryas comet hit in the Lake Superior area.
Yes.
And we believe that this is a demarcation point, that before this time, humans were all one big race on the surface of the planet, but that in order to survive this comet coming in, that mm-hmm. some of them entrenched themselves underground and under the ice sheets.
It also tells us in the 1,200 different flood myths that have been uncovered over the years, like Graham Hancock and
yes.
others that have uncovered these over the past 400 years, that there's another factor too. You can read in the Bible or the Mahabharata or whatever.
Yeah, there's 1,200
separate everybody was given forewarning. Okay, that there
yes.
was a period of time, whether it be a year or two, that there was different advice, depending where you lived on the earth, either go to the highest point you can find, build an ark, or basically
or
dig underground
yeah.
like with Darren Kuyu in Turkey. So, but there was foreknowledge. So in other words, we were advanced, or somebody was advanced enough to, number one,
have
notify us, and then
yeah.
care enough to say, okay, We can't save everybody, but
warn the whole world anyway. You know,
and there was also a genetic bottleneck that was found too about that time, that that the human race was reduced to about 10,000 individuals on the Earth. So all 8 billion of us that exist now have basically regenerated or basically been born from those 10,000.
I call it, it's kind of like the movie Deep Impact, right? You guys seen it? Okay.
If yeah,
listeners
of course.
Out there haven't seen the movie. A killer asteroid is approaching the Earth, and President Morgan Freeman sends some astronauts out to blow up the asteroid. But Plan B, if they fail, Plan B is to dig these deep arcs underground and preserve a portion of our population. Obviously, the best of our population, you know, the smartest and the most healthy youngest. And the youngest and whatever. And so they picked 50,000 people that are going to go under. And they didn't lose, they weren't going to lose their technology. They took their technology and their knowledge with them, right? So we think this exact scenario may actually have happened, where they saw it coming, they dug in underground, and they took their technology with them. But us poor schmucks that were left on the surface, we got wiped out almost and shoved back into the Stone Age to become hunter-gatherers. Because, you know, the after the comet struck, there was 1,100 years after that of climate, drastic climate.
We were coming out of an ice age. We went shoved right back into
it. So it would have been impossible to grow crops and, you know, just eking out a living. We would have had no choice but to go back to being like hunter-gatherers for 1,000 years while the Earth calmed back down again. And so our knowledge and our technology didn't survive. But the people who either escaped into space or escaped underground or escaped under the water, under the ice sheets, we think that they are us, but they're incredibly different than us, and they have since mutated to become the Greys and other various forms.
Well, like the Nordics, you know, we still see the Nordics are the main reptilians, the main ones that are in charge. And they use genetics kind of like Lego sets, you know.
It's just
like an easy tool. Yes. I mean, look where we are right now with CRISPR technology. We're already playing around with that. We're tinkering around with AI. I mean, and then we definitely have way too many nukes. So they look at this as like being barbaric. And they, like they said, with Admiral Byrd, they said, we normally keep ourselves out of your business, you know, because we find you guys to be, you know,
you're barbarians, barbaric.
We still need you, but you're barbaric. Yes. And now you're playing around with something that can destroy our home too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we need you to like, you know, wake up and just stop. But you know what? Unfortunately, we have so many anxieties and fears and anger, and we all speak different languages. You know, that's a problem. A lot of it's communication, I think.
Yeah.
And this the fact that they're taking genetic material from so many Caucasians specifically, it made me realize that an alien race coming from a distant star
Alpha
system,
Centauri,
they're not going to have any particular need for Caucasian DNA, per se, but a separate race of Caucasians that split away from us and has been living underground for 13,000 years, they might have a real use for genetic material from surface dwellers. In fact, that may be something they desperately need from us. For all we know, this is how they are able to reproduce now. Maybe they became a non-viable species at some point and are using us to essentially perpetuate their species. Or possibly it could be part of their bizarre breeding program, which I believe is a method to try and reintegrate with us and to also infiltrate us.
What we also talk about in our book, too, in one whole chapter, we go into especially just how frequently these celestial impacts are, a lot more frequent than we even thought. We you know, like I say, our book really does a step-by-step, almost like a criminal investigation into building our case as far as like why we believe from what the data that we found that we think we're pretty close on the mark. but in our book.
But chapter one, I had to assume that people picking up the book would know nothing about the UFO phenomenon, right? Mm-hmm. Sure, some people are going to read it that know everything about it, but some people are going to pick up and know nothing about it. So the first chapter is this, I think it's kind of neat. It's a one chapter crammed 80 years of UFO history into almost like bullet points. And then this happened, and this happened, and this happened.
Crash course.
So if you just wanted, yeah, it's literally a crash course. And so it really gives a whole overview of what the alien and the UFO phenomenon have been we've been dealing with for 80 years. But then after that, the second chapter is about the new disclosure policies the government is doing, which has been very exciting for us ufologists, the difference in the government program. For years, for 80 years, they just stonewalled us. They said, it's swamp gas, it's mass hysteria.
Weather balloons.
A weather balloon, yeah, exactly.
Misidentification of already like a plane or Venus or whatever it may be.
Right, that's just the moon, you know, or some crazy, or you know. Just gaslighting us, you know, for 80 years.
So,
And then Luis Elizondo releases his three videos and his story to the New York Times in 2017. And we expect the DOD to do the same thing and just say, oh, it's bull, it's not happening. But then they shocked us all by releasing a statement that said, these things are real. This is a real phenomenon. And then they said, well, but we don't know what it is. And of course, we know they are lying there because they still know they have crashed ships and, you know, dead alien bodies. So we're pretty sure they know exactly what's going on.
And then they just recently backtracked again in the past week or two.
Right.
They basically backtracked the Arrow program, which took over from ATIP. They backtracked and said that, we haven't found any. The Pentagon says we haven't found any evidence to support the fact that there are aliens.
Yeah.
And you know what? They are partially right. Because with our theory, which is in our book, we don't think that they're extraterrestrials. That's the difference.
Except for the ones that escaped into space, we think. We think that prior to the impact of the Younger Dryas comet, that we were actually a spacefaring race. And I think we are the ones that put the structures on Mars, the structures we're seeing on the moon, you know, and the structure that was found on Phobos, one of Mars's moons. There's these man-made looking structures on these things. We think that it was just us. And prior to that, we were a spacefaring race. So we think some of the people that escaped the cataclysm also may have escaped into space. And we think the Nordics, who are indistinguishable from Swedish humans, we're still talking about humans here, right? They look exactly like humans. And even the grays, we look more like grays than we do like our closest other relative on this planet, which is the chimp.
The bonobos chimp.
Right. When you x-ray a chimp, their skeletal structure is similar to ours, but they can't walk upright. They can't stand up.
They freeze?
I'm still here.
No, I think they froze. You and I can hear each other. Guess we'll give them a second, see if they pop back.
So the book, again, let's put it again. It's Who They Are and What They're Up To by Leslie and Stephen Shaw. And I really would like to hear people's stories. Our Instagram is open for our Facebook for posting. We're at leslie.shaw.author. And Leslie is leslie.shaw.author. And we're at Instagram and Facebook. We are collecting stories. We want to hear from people about their stories.
We have a lot of posting on there, too.
Cryptid and UFO, because we have some theories about Bigfoot as well. And we have a website. It's whotheyarebook.com, and there's excerpts there, and blogs, and all of the podcast links that we've been
on. And stories about, you know, my family and things like that.
Yes, and the Instagram, we have about 33 stories posted from Steven's family. All these different bizarre experiences that we just didn't have time to go into all of them here. But people can read up on them there.
Perfect. And I'll, of course, include all of the links down in the show description so everybody can find everything really, really quick and easy. And I appreciate you guys making the time to come on the show today. And I'm really looking forward to next time we all get to interact and throw theories around with each other.
Thank you so much for having us.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
If you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. 5 stars would be absolutely fantastic. Makes it so that more people are able to see the show, pushes us up in the algorithms, rankings, all of that stuff. Because the only way this show is ever going to keep expanding is with your guys' help. So anything that you guys do, we greatly appreciate, of course. And if you know anybody that might enjoy this particular episode or the show as a whole, don't forget to share it through word of mouth. Organic growth is the best way for these podcasts to grow. And if you guys want us to get to a point where we can possibly put out multiple episodes for you guys a week, we've got to keep expanding the show. And again, we're only going to be able to do that with your guys' help.
And you guys know how the internet works. Do all the internet things. Contact us either through email, social media, the various submission forms. We're not hard to find. And you guys also feel free to share any fan art, you know, just have a conversation, invite yourselves on the show to be a guest or invite us on your show to be a guest. Like I said, just get up with us.
And everything that we mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, I have been the one that they call Shane.
And I've been Oren.
And guys, again, I got to tell you every episode because sometimes we get new listeners. Sometimes y'all forget out there. But guys, always don't be afraid to stay bizarre. Bizarre.
Alien fetuses?